You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Michael Oliver. You can check in with Michael. I would suggest that all our listeners go to olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com, to learn more about Michael and his work. Michael, thanks for joining me again.
Good to be here again.
And, so the equity market just doesn't want to do what I think you thought it was going to do some time ago. It isn't. It just seems as though it doesn't seem to have the same sort of upward trajectory that it had. It seems like it's maybe topping out, it would seem, if you look at the chart longer term. But I don't know. What, you're the technical guy.
I think it's topped. I think now I'm talking the broad market now. I'm talking the index that covers 500 stocks, and they're all large companies, and that's the S&P 500. I think probably you saw the high. Last September, actually it was September the 11th, we had a report, and I showed tops of S&P tops going back in history for four or five prior tops. And I to explain to subscribers that it's not always 29 or 87.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at a lot of the old tops, they were what I call, the term we use was arduous. And I speculated in that report, I think this one's going to be arduous too. And I said, don't look for the top until 2018. And, we didn't peak until late January 2018. And we had the first hard wobble. And then for the last 4 to 5 months, since the February low, the market has been wheel spinning on the S&P. With lows down around 2550, 2600, and highs up in the as high as 2800, which got back within 70 points of the January high. That was back in early March. But we've really, if you just look at a weekly bar chart of the S&P since, let's say, the February low, you'll notice it's wheel spinning. There's a lot of rubber burning, and it's going up and down and up and down and up and down, and there's a gradual, maybe, upward bias within that clump of ink, but it really hasn't gone anywhere. And right now we're about 130 points off the high of the year.
Right.
And a statistic my son Brett, who works with me at MSA, gave me the other day was that 68% of the total return of the S&P year to date comes from, I think it was 4 stocks.
Wow.
And I don't even need to tell you the names, okay? This is exceptionally, exceptionally narrow leadership situation. And it's exhibited primarily not in the S&P, though they've had a big influence there of holding it afloat, but in the NASDAQ 100.
Right.
Which is a much narrower and a more heavily front-end weighted index of those particular symbols. Therefore, it's making a new high. Mm-hmm. And, of course, everybody has been taught in rudimentary investing to seek value, that kind of thing. They're chasing a handful of stocks that are represented by that index and by the ETF, PNQI, and a few. But it's an exceptionally narrow situation here. And, therefore, I am not impressed whatsoever that the NASDAQ makes a new high. In fact, now that it's done the new high, I want a new high up to at least 7,200. We're just short of that right now. I think it's the number I'm looking for. But anyway, it's very narrow. It's a 10-year-old bull market. Think twice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? History's not on your side. And we take that same principle and apply it to commodities as well. For instance, oil's been quite strong since we turned bullish on oil in April of 2016. It was at $42 at that point. And we've suggested about 2 to 3 chunks out of the upside move for our subscribers. Instead of catching the whole thing, we suggested chunks, and it was an appropriate way because oil had some big givebacks during that move. But it got up to 72. a few weeks ago. So it's had a good percentage move from a $26 low to a $72 high. That is not the commodity to be pinning your money on. Look for value. Look for exhausted markets. And some of them are fairly exotic, like uranium recently. We said, okay, it's a buy. The problem is you can't buy uranium. There is a futures contract, but it's so illiquid that you can't trade it. But at least the price information from Chicago Merck that we get on the futures allowed us to analyze that underlying that energy commodity, and it's off the page in terms of price. It's way below cost of production. And so we suggested go with CCJ, Cameco, which is produces 15% of the world's uranium, or an ETF of uranium stocks. Think value, because that's where you can get the greatest percent explosive gain from levels that are off the page. I mean, uranium prices where they are now, they could almost double and they'd still be cheap.
Yeah.
Historically speaking.
No question. Yeah. No question about it. The uranium producers, very few of them are able to make money. Cameco, which you just noted, is one exception with extremely high grade uranium up in Canada. And so there are a couple of ways to play it, I guess. Go ahead.
Natural gas is another one. You know, it doesn't move with oil. It's laying in the weeds for the last year at very low levels. And, I know that we get a lot of natural gas, et cetera, but the technicals say some levels barely above where the market is now that it's going to break out. And when it does, it could easily double in price rapidly within 6 months, to our view, from roughly go up 50%. It's 290 area now. We think it does, give or take three, it could easily go to 450. And even 450 on natural gas is off the page dirt cheap when you look at historical charts. So it's not really a big move, but percent-wise, if you can make 50% in something or 30% in something, and there's plenty of commodities like that. Sugar looks poised for a turn. We've got specific numbers that we specify. They haven't been hit yet. Coffee, things you don't think about. But they're commodities that have been beat off the page. They've gone dead, meaning I'm not going down anymore. They're not going to go to zero. And they built bases, and they've got structures to go. When they break out, they're going to surge. We also continue to advocate holding long position in the precious metals, gold and silver, and or related mines. But chasing the strong commodities like copper, which has been pretty strong, or oil, is not the place to be now. We think there's better places to be. And we think some of the percent moves you could see in those markets would make the stock market look like nothing in terms of speed and percent that can be gained.
Michael, with regard to gold, how close do you think we are to some sort of a breakout? I think last week, I believe you told me you're not too concerned now about the need to go neutral.
Yeah.
But in terms of the upside, how close might we be to something that could...
I've got some numbers, I don't want to give everything away because, we have people that pay. But roughly speaking, like the August contract is not quite front month yet. June is still on the board. And it's about $4 above the June contract. But August gold's trading up 1303 today. and I think last week when we spoke, gold was at 1302. So it's taken the dollar's rally in stride fairly well, because the percent decline in gold we've had since the beginning of the year is actually, I think, less than the percent increase in the dollar, which is highly unusual because normally gold's about double. What the dollar does, if to the extent that it's linked to it, to some extent it is, of course, but it's not. It's also it's a competitor to other currencies as well. But it's held very well, and I think, frankly, if you ever saw 1320 again, you could just scratch it off. The correction's over. We're going up, and I've got some numbers a little bit lower than that, even around 1310, which is like to say $7 above today's high in August gold.
Yeah.
So I think it looks pretty good. I'm sort of more keen on watching silver, because I have a sense that the next move up in those two markets, silver's going to be a little more robust for technical reasons. But 6 of 1 half dozen of the other, they both look poised to come out of their sleep and go up again. And they've taken the beating, whatever the dollar could dish out to them in its counter-trend rally. They've taken it well. In fact, silver's taken it with a total yawn. you know, on its chart, it's been sideways for over a year. So you don't even know there was a dollar rally.
Michael, with regard to the dollar, so you think this is only a counter-trend rally that's about run its course?
I think it may have seen its high. It was just above 95 on the dollar index. Right now we're trading in the high 93s. And I think if you drop about 0.30 below where you're trading right now, they're going to you could probably circle the high and say that was the corrective high. And I the reason I call it a counter-trend rally is when I look at long-term technical studies that we run, momentum, annual momentum, quarterly, so forth, long-term stuff, the rally isn't breaking out over anything. It's just a flare. It's a little flare in a downtrend. Normally, we need when you have a turn in a market that is a trend-changing turn, you can look at your momentum charts and see something being broken out above or below. In this case, the dollar rally, the only way to find something that broke out above is to go down to dailies or weeklies. When you go to monthlies and plot them versus a three-year average, for example, or a three-quarter average, they're not breaking out over anything. You're just having a rally in a downtrend. After all, you got to remember, it went from 103.50 to just above 88 without a major rally. Finally, we got a rally, and I think it's probably petering out. Why the euro, which is 57% of the dollar index, would want to go up, I really don't know, and I don't care. It doesn't make any sense, but fiat currencies don't make any sense anyway.
Right, exactly, exactly. Well, I think it's the dollar issue is very important because obviously this so-called stronger dollar the last little while has put some pressure on a lot of the emerging market currencies and countries. And so I wanted to ask you about the emerging markets because I know that's one area that you were bullish on, and I gather you still are bullish as I look at your charts from the weekend here. I'm looking at an EEM. This is a S&P 500 monthly closes, EMM monthly close versus the S&P 500. But what is your view generally on the emerging markets, realizing that, every market is different?
We expected a correction after a massive surge. We got bullish in January of 2017, and the EEM, which is an ETF of the emerging markets, went up about almost double what the S&P did during the same period of time. And when the S&P wobbled hard in February and started the corrective pull, not a corrective pullback, but the topping process, EEM had a correction, and the correction went to levels that we thought it would go to, and since then it started to firm again. I still think the EEM is correlated to a commodity upturn. Commodity upturn, most people don't quite see it yet because it isn't across the board. But we clearly had gold as well off the lows of a couple years ago, oil is, copper is, so forth. And there's a lot of other ones that are about to do that. And I think particularly some of those growing commodities, like the stuff that Brazil makes, you know, sugar, cocoa, coffee, soybeans, so forth. Those type of things, when they come alight, it's going to help a lot of the emerging markets on a relative basis.
Sure.
So what we've advocated is after the surge in the EEM on a net price basis, which was explosively strong, far vastly outpaced the S&P, we suggested late last year and early this year that those who are long the EEM should hedge that position now, hold the EEM long, but short the S&P against it, or an equivalent of the S&P. So create a global market neutral situation, long emerging, short developed markets. And I think that spread is going to work out just fine over the next year or two.
Right. Well, it certainly has worked out.
Yeah, well, your so betting far, on is the difference to come back to more normality, because the EEM was clobbered from 2011 to 2016, while the S&P was going up with QEs, the EEM was collapsing, just like commodities were. And so it's a flexible market. It's 1 year old.
Well, it's quite the correlation, no doubt. And I guess with regard to oil, you would be sort of sitting on the sidelines or just neutral kind of it now?
What we like about oil right now is I think it's continued to go higher, but I don't think the percentages that it's going to go higher are that great anymore. It's done so much in the last year and a half or so, or 2 years. What we do like is long energy-related stocks, like XLE, the ETF for energy-related stocks, against the S&P. That was a very punished sector. It dropped 50% from 2014 to 16. And therefore, it is in a different technical category and fundamental category that is in the S&P. It had a bear market. It is correlated to a rising commodity, even albeit not an explosively rising commodity anymore, but one that should be retain firmness. And therefore, we like the energy stocks relative to the S&P on a spread basis.
Mm-hmm.
So again,
well, I think I'm wondering if you wouldn't see the same thing with the gold shares too then.
Yes. Well, except that they're always in a different world, stock market. Whereas energy stocks sometimes correlate with the stock market.
So
we're betting that if the S&P goes down, and even if the energy stocks go down, they're going to go down far less. Or they may even continue to go upward while the S&P goes down. After all, they dropped 50% during 2014 to 2016 while the S&P went up. So they can go opposite the S&P, the XLE I'm talking about. We treat it again as a spread, something we like. We like those kind of situations where you're betting on the difference between two assets, a difference bet.
Yeah, I should tell my listeners that you frequently do that in all different markets. You're looking at spreads, and you just sort of touched the surface, some of the more important markets from our perspective, some of the bigger markets. But, boy, you cover so many different things, so many different ways to make money with Oliver MSA, folks, and I would just suggest you go there. Michael, I understand you won't be with us next week. You have something else you have to take you away from the show. But I want to thank you so much for your generous time this week and for being with us, and we'll look forward, hopefully, to having you back again sometime in the following week, if possible.
Good. Thank you, Jay.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael. Okay, folks. Well, we do have to go to break, but don't go away, because when we come back, I'm going to be talking to Keith Weiner. He is the CEO and founder of Monetary Metals, and he's going to talk to us about Paul Krugman's notion that you can just simply, it doesn't matter how much debt you put on the books as long as you owe it to yourselves. And we're going to question Keith about that and some other related topics, so don't go away. We'll be right back with Keith Weiner.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.